You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
I'm Aggie Dawn. And,
no, you're not. Don't even. Okay. Why do you start like that?
I don't know.
I know Maggie Dawn. I work with Maggie Dawn. You, sir, are no Maggie Dawn.
Thank you, Jacob.
Beautiful,
Jacob. Thank you.
Yeah, well, this is Civic Media Radio Network, and John and Gordy in the morning from WMDX doing the afternoon fill-in show.
And Maggie, you'll be back tomorrow, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, if you're irritated by our antics here, she will be back.
She will be back.
Yes. By the way, I just want to mention that Gordy and I are going to be at the Brewer game next Tuesday.
Yes, Tuesday evening.
To see the Brewers and the Cubs.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
We had a contest here, and we gave away tickets for it, so we'll be sitting with the winner.
It'll be fun.
Just love Milwaukee.
Looking forward to it.
All right.
Phone lines are open here at the Civic Media Radio Network, 855-752-4842. We have Troy on the line from Mount Horeb with a question or a comment. Good afternoon, Troy. Yeah. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. How you doing?
Good.
All right. Good. What's on your mind?
Good, good. Hey, stop rubbing in that I didn't win the tickets to that Brewer game, by the way.
Sorry, buddy.
Yeah, well.
It's really interesting when people like Clay and other followers of the Storm Jesus bring up Ronald Reagan like they like him. Reagan and Bush in the primary argued about how many people we should let into this country from Mexico.
That's true.
And Ronald Reagan gave amnesty to 3 million undocumented people, which Clay's head would explode if he remembered that. So
I forgot about that. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So when he brings up Ronald Reagan and acts like he likes him, it's ridiculous. So
it was a wonderful speech, a great argument against what's going on right now. Wouldn't you agree?
We played
Reagan's speech.
His last speech
as president. Fantastic. Look it up. It's really, really good.
Yeah, you can find it on YouTube.
All right, Troy. Hey, thanks for giving us a call from out in Mount Horeb. All right.
We appreciate it.
Yeah. Now let's get to our special guest this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And it is...
Attorney Jim Santel.
Do I have to say everything on this show?
Yeah, I know. Good afternoon, Jim.
Gentlemen, good to be with you in this afternoon and maybe tomorrow morning as well. So we've got a lot to talk about these days, don't we?
Yes, you're going to be our guest tomorrow morning as well.
Yeah, terrific. On our local show.
There'll be other cases to have to talk about.
12 more things will happen between now and 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. All of them headlines.
But, hey, I just wanted to ask you about this latest thing, though, where the Justice Department, Pam Bondi, fired the attorney, U.S. attorney in District New Jersey. How is that possible? How can you just fire somebody that was just designated by a federal judge in order to put that person in place? How do you do that?
Lots and lots of complicated rules. The short answer is that because you are a political appointee, you're exposed to the notion that, yes, the president, attorney general can fire you. And I was U.S. attorney. If Eric Holder had called me up and said, Jim, your time is done, your time is done.
Oh,
your question goes to a larger issue, which is these positions, even though they are politically appointed, are not supposed to be that, right? They're supposed to be people who come to these positions for the purpose of administering the law, figuring out what the facts are, making determinations about who should be charged in criminal cases, civil things like that. And all the machinations going on there in and out of the U.S. Attorney's Office do two things. One is they underscore the political nature of this administration, including this attorney general, who is firing and hiring people based upon their political perspective. And then I think about this, the people of New Jersey and the calamity caused inside that office. It's certainly be going on. We've seen this in other places.
Mm-hmm.
And the lack of stability, the lack of who is in charge, that compromises. I can tell you the extent to which the staff, the good attorneys who are civil servants doing your work every day, have confidence in what they're doing and feel a sense of commitment to the office and to the department. That's what this compromises also when there's a revolving door based upon what Pam Bondi and the president is dictating. And it, again, underscores this notion that the wall between the presidency and the attorney general and the Department of Justice completely rundown in this administration.
I'm surprised there isn't some kind of wall, some kind of law, some kind of rule that prevents this from happening, where if it looks like you're being political, then it stops immediately. There is a challenge to it, and then you have to go to court or something happens to stop this from happening.
Right. And you also got, the other thing that's going on in many of these districts, too, is you've got all these different arcane rules that I was in and out of when I was the interim U.S. attorney and acting U.S. attorney, having to do with the extent to which a president can appoint somebody for a term of days. Then it reverts to the federal judiciary. Then it goes back to the attorney general. All these kinds of things established by Congress. It's not intuitive. There should be more clarity. And the people of the United States of America to expect that. You nominate U.S. attorneys, they're confirmed by the Senate based upon their credentials, and not because they're allied with the president. In my case, not because I was allied with Barack Obama. I had never met the man in my life, and I did later on. But, all those kinds of things, that's the kind of thing you want to establish in a U.S. attorney's office, and that's what we have run roughshod over.
That's right.
Jim, what happened to all these, every once in a while you hear about a case where it goes to a special master or somebody that oversees these different departments within the Department of Justice or oversees what the judges are doing. You never hear about them anymore stepping in or, these cases, being seen by somebody else coming in with a more objective view that can tell these judges, hey, you can't just do this, right? The attorneys.
Yep, there are lots of different mechanisms out there. One of them is, of course, the inside the department, supposed to be independent, which is the Office of the Inspector General. That person should come in, right? That's probably what you're in part talking about. There can be the appointment of special counsels. We saw a lot of that under Merrick Garland, right? People coming in and once again looking at what the department's doing, what it isn't doing. And the idea is, as you hit it right in the head, that you've got somebody who is not beholden to, doesn't hold his job by virtue of an appointment, coming in with, again, plainly a partisan background, but for the purpose of this assignment, figuring out what went wrong and then making decisions, making recommendations. That's what this inspector general should do. That's what a special counsel should do. There's also this concept of special masters, which judges can appoint a special master. We saw that in the Mar-a-Lago case. Remember this with Eileen Cannon? She appointed a special master to look at all these documents, all kinds of mechanisms that will assist and support the operation of justice. And the whole idea is get people in, as we have talked so often on your morning program, this program as well, who know what they're doing, right? The expertise, the insight, the experience, and maybe don't rely on them 100%, but at least you benefit from their recommendation. That's what we miss when we have these unilateral decisions by the president, by the attorney general, and the politicization of a department in a way that we have never seen in any administration up until now, including those of a Democratic presidency, Republican presidency. This is of a whole new cut.
Well, I look at this as a big problem. And when I see a problem, I always try to come up with a solution. Jim, is there anything Congress can do eventually if it becomes democratically controlled and we have a Democratic president? Is there something we can do to fine-tune this to prevent something like this from happening again?
Right. And this, one of the things, of course, the big one, of course, is impeachment. That may still be a big a lift for the Congress to do. But beyond that, we've talked about this before, the oversight, right? Yes, indeed, the Attorney General does show up at the House Judiciary Committee and other committees on the Senate side as well. But some meaningful teeth, we're talking even today about some of the House and Senate committees issuing subpoenas. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's got to be approved by a majority of the members of the committee. That you can do if you've got a majority in your committee. The other thing, again, we haven't had to think about this before, but to going back to your very first question, John, this notion of reestablishing a separation, an arm's length between the decisions made by prosecutors in the Department of Justice and the White House. Mm-hmm. And can you legislate that? Well, maybe we haven't done that yet. It's always been understood. Maybe, some bright guys like Adam Schiff in the Senate and others in the House can come up with some legislation that does, in fact, impose upon the Department of Justice some rules and regulations when it comes to this kind of thing. This president, again, this business, again, with Jeffrey Epstein, it is also a reflection of the fact that he is so involved in the day-to-day operation of our Justice Department that he's also taking now the heat for making decisions about these issues.
Exactly.
Case-specific mm-hmm. things, who is prosecuted, what you do with the grand jury, directions to the attorney general. None of that should be happening, mm-hmm. and it wasn't happening until this administration and this administration of Donald Trump in particular, who's erased that line completely mm-hmm. with the concurrence of the attorney general and implicitly the people of the United States.
Yeah. Talking with attorney Jim Santel, let's go to the phones. Mark is on the line from Prairie du Sac with a question. Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a little hot here. Hearing, in addition to the temperature outside, that CJ's nonsense about they came through an open, they came through the door. Well, open the damn door then. I mean that we both Democrats and Republicans have failed to pass comprehensive immigration reform. But these people are coming to this country desperate to escape where they've come from, like our ancestors did coming from Europe. I mean, escaping famines and economic conditions in Europe, and just because they happened to have come, 100 years ago, because some of the immigration rules weren't as strict back then. I mean, that they just and they came. And Ronald Reagan is saying we welcome all these people, and some of these people they're actually here legally. They actually have, the one guy had a green card and was getting a replacement green card and he got deported. I mean, it is just ridiculous. I mean, that what Ronald Reagan said was an affirmation of what it says on the Statue of Liberty, that those are the people we want in this country. And just because they happen to be of more than likely of a different skin tone than some of these people think is they want to have, they think they're going to vote, the way that they want people to vote, I guess, on the Republican side. And that's not any guarantee, but, I mean, it is just ridiculous that they're rounding all these people up, putting them in a damn concentration camp, and that's all you can call those things. It looks like a concentration camp, smells like a concentration camp, it is a concentration camp, and the people that have been back in this, damn them. Mm-hmm. I mean,
Mark, thank you. Appreciate that call. Yep. Yeah, we feel your frustration, too. And they're building more of these camps here in the U.S.
Well,
now.
The big bad bill designated more money to build more of these camps. In fact, they're building more camps. They're spending more money on these camps than they spent on the entire federal prison system in the country.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
That's outrageous.
Yeah. Crazy.
Mark,
what do you
Mark's
think,
point
Jim?
Underscores something else, and that is the president has rescinded what was another Biden administration, this TPS, a temporary protective service, which is protecting people who are here because they were fearful of torture back home. The Supreme Court recently said, go ahead, Donald Trump, you can get rid of them from this country as
it's outrageous.
Stunning. Stunning.
Yeah, it is stunning stuff.
Mm-hmm. 19 past the hour. We will continue with attorney Jim Santel. And hopefully more of your phone calls. Give us a call now, 855-752-4842. John Agordi in for Maggie Dawn on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Golden. Civic Media Radio Network, John and Gordy filling in for Maggie Dawn today.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful day here in Madison where we're broadcasting. We do the morning show here on WMDX and filling in for Maggie this afternoon.
Yeah, if you like politics in the morning, check it out sometime.
Mm-hmm. You can get us on the Civic Media app. We're continuing our discussion here with Jim Santel. He hosts Amicus, a law review, and you can hear that every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Let's talk about the judge denying the grand jury material. Let's get into that.
Absolutely. So this is another Florida judge. It's not the one you're thinking about, not Eileen Cannon. This is Judge Robin Rosenberg, okay? And remember last week when the president said, I'm done with this Democratic hoax. I'm the hoax. And so I'm directing my attorney general to get those grand jury documents out of the public. So Pam Bondi appropriately does that. She files an application. Here's your bit of civics under something called Rule 6E of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure. Okay, there you go. We'll talk about that tonight over dinner.
All right,
and
6E,
what the judge says is, okay, I'm looking at 6E, and it tells me that I can release grand jury materials when there's some reason to do so that's law enforcement related, some other case we need to get them, there's some national security interest, something that, compels me for the purposes of government function and not because it's the subject of parlor games and messaging and all these other things.
Yep.
And so she says this afternoon, she says, you know what, 12-page opinion. She says, you know what, her hands are tied because the rule that permits this under narrow circumstances does not include, because there's a great public interest in this, that's not law enforcement related. And here's the other point to all this. The grand jury stuff from the beginning, it was a misdirected thing from our president, not surprisingly. The grand jury materials in this would tell you the basis upon which the grand jury indicted Maxwell and Epstein, what they did. It would give you the names of the people with whom they worked, maybe not all the victims. It would not provide you necessarily with all this information about maybe if there's a list, which there probably is not. That's not how these people do their work. But the real file, it's sitting at the Department of Justice. And so if the president really wants this released, just tell Pam Bondi, go. It's probably electronic. Some of it's documentary. The grand jury transcripts were never going to tell you what it is you want, which is who is out there working with Jeff Epstein. That is still, maybe it's on Pam Bondi's desk. She can disclose that tomorrow if she wants. And so this whole thing has been a wonderful ride through the grand jury process. The judge appropriately saying, nope, can do it. My guess is the president sometime will say, see, once again, those federal judges, they prevent me from doing what I want to do. I can't release this. And so, and again, I hope the American public, including all your good listeners here, the afternoon, the morning show as well, understand that's not only misleading, Mr. President, that's a lie about how this works. And you knew it from the start, or at least people around you, including the attorney general, knew. It's not about grand jury transcripts, never was. It's about the stuff and the materials in the file, and that is accessible to you and to Pam Bondi. Release it if you want. Let's put this to an end and go forward with the work of the nation.
Right.
Right. And in fact, you know, the House is going to come back. They're going to have to vote on it after their vacation in September.
Right.
And all of this is just going to delay and delay and delay. And then we'll have to vote on it in the House. And they'll have to find a way to make sure that they don't let any of this material be released. Now, Pam Bondi can, if she wanted to, release all this stuff. But what about this? What about accusing Obama of treason?
Well, I mean, where's this coming from? Left field.
Right.
My God.
The president has a shiny metal object in his hand and he throws it down the hallway and says, look at that. Look at that. And the shiny metal object is neither shiny nor metal. None of it's real. But again, it's something for people to trace and say, oh, my goodness, Tulsi Gabbard. As our again, the national security advisor and head of the intelligence group. She is now making criminal referrals to the Department of Justice based upon things that she sees in her files. What is that about? No. Yeah. This comes from the Department of Justice. If there's a reason for someone to be indicted, which there's not here, Barack Obama did nothing wrong. James Comey did nothing wrong. They'll take care of it. All of this procedurally and substantively is just one more way of saying Barack Obama's responsible, Hillary Clinton's responsible, Joe Biden's responsible. It's the timing is off, the history is off, the substance is off. And I wish desperately that my president would get on to things, which he probably will not do, things like the environment and education. Yeah. Okay, I know he's shutting down the education department, but let's talk about agriculture and labor and things that mean something. Mm-hmm. Instead, we're doing this, and this is how we're spending our time in 2025.
Well, now we're going to spend a whole bunch of time talking about gerrymandering. And now, supposedly, the Supreme Court may allow gerrymandering of these states. And what they're doing is they're targeting minority groups,
minority
districts.
Right. And so this is the next thing that may come up on the Supreme Court docket this coming term. Likely they may take this up. And it would be, if indeed this is under the Voting Rights Act in Section 2, it could be another opportunity, I say that with great dismay, for the Supreme Court to take another swing at the Voting Rights Act. There have been two major cases in recent years where they've limited its impact. Now we're figuring out whether or not the core of the Voting Rights Act, which is to promote voting and ensure there are no obstacles for people of color to vote in America since the 1960s. Now, are we going to take a look at that and determine whether or not you can design districts to get around that and make that legal. That's what's coming up maybe in front of the next Supreme Court term. Stunning, once again.
Never ends.
It is stunning. Well, we ran out of time. I wanted to get to the 19 Democratic states that don't have to go along with the executive order to prove citizenship for voting.
We'll have to save that for some other time.
Jim, thanks again for joining us.
That's Jim Santel and hosting.
Always a pleasure.
Always the host of Amicus, a law review every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 on the Civic Media Radio Network. When we come back, Pete Schwab is going to be in studio with
us.
You
seen him alive?
Yeah, he's peeking right around the corner here. Okay. Jim, again, thank you.
Yeah.
And we'll be back. John and Gordy in for Maggie Dawn on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Civic Media Radio Network, John and Gordy in for Maggie Dawn. The number 855-752-4842, or text us or voice mail us.
Voice notice.
Notice.
Note. It's a voice note. It's called voice notices? Note.
Okay.
It's not a notice. It's a note.
Okay.
You go onto the app.
Well, I'm getting used to it,
never
you know.
Mind.
I guess the kids are into it. The Gen Zers are talking about it.
Yeah, Maggie Dawn will be back tomorrow. We're just filling in for it today. Yeah. And joining us now is our friend, our buddy, our nighttime host here on the Civic Media Radio Network, Pete Schwab. Pete, good to see you in
Fellows,
person.
How are you?
Yeah, we're doing all right. You're here all week, right, in our studio
here
in Madison.
I'm here doing the show this week. We have some people on vacation up in Green Bay, so they said, come on down to Madison. And
okay.
I said, I just told you, I love to come to Madison because there's no Indian food in Marinette.
Wow.
There's like two Indians that live there, and they're both terrible cooks. So,
is that so?
I love
it's almost all we have here.
Yeah, there's some really great Indian food around here, right?
Yeah,
where do you go on? Is there a place on State Street I don't know about yet? Or there is what's the nearest place?
Oh, I haven't eaten there in a while. I can't remember the name of it, but I went to Maharani. I've been going to Maharani or Maharini.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Lately, and then there's a place on the west side I found, Daba. Or I think it's called
DHABA.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. I love Indian food. I'll have to check that one
out. It's very good stuff. Yeah. Oh, they're all great. I just want to say before we start, I've already read both of these books. Is that a problem? Is that, can I?
It might be a problem. Look, I've got a book over here I haven't read yet.
We have these customized mic stands.
The book exchange we could do here. Yes, it's a book club.
Yeah. It is a book club.
This is outrageous, I know, but one of these days we'll get Mike Booms in here. I promise you.
They're on the way.
Yeah. I'm not complaining. They're both fine.
No, I'm complaining.
All right, so who's on your show tonight?
Yeah.
Because you're here until 8.
I've got Frank Anderson, who founded a website called Wisconsinology.com.
Okay. Oh, he's great.
Oh, he's so great.
He is so fun.
He's a regular, and I've known Frank for a long time. We have a great time together, and he just, if you haven't checked out Wisconsinology.com, it's great factoids about Wisconsin.
Stories.
Ghost stories, history stories, weird stuff.
Right. Yeah, no, he's really good.
Yeah, and he's a... you know, he makes movies and commercials, and he's kind of a showbiz renaissance man. He's played with Butch Vig and you know, Smart Studios and all that. So Frank's a great guy. And then Kaylin Cole, an up and coming singer songwriter, is going to be going to come into the studio to let us get a listen to her new single. Two days early, guys.
Okay,
it's a Nightlight exclusive.
Really?
Yeah.
So, exclusive.
Yeah.
Wow.
She's great. I love Kaylin, so she'll be in it.
She's a great singer.
Now, are you staying around for the weekend too?
Because
the Atwood Fest is happening this weekend. Lots of really great music, a lot of fun.
Yeah,
on the east side of Madison.
Pop over there and try to get some sound bites. I'll see how hot it is, and I've been here all week, so I might be sick of Indian food by that Saturday.
I do want to pass along a great guest. I don't know if you talked to Tom Manis and Christy Flick Manis. They have a book called Historic Wisconsin Roadsides.
Oh wow,
we had them on this morning.
Yeah,
and they were great.
They were unbelievable. Yeah. They have another book, Secrets of Wisconsin.
Oh nice,
and it's just. They know everything about every little nook and cranny in Wisconsin.
They're travel writers.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they live in Wisconsin, but they travel all over the world.
Nice.
Yeah, and they're entertaining.
Really.
Was my name in the Secrets of Wisconsin book? I'm just curious.
Well, I don't know. This is our way of breaking it to you. You're on a hotel list. I don't know what happened there.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And then a couple of nights ago, you had our friend John Roach in here.
Yeah.
Oh, John's
a
blast.
That was a great interview. It was really fun to listen to you two. And you didn't really know him until recently, right? We go way back with him.
Yeah. I met him when I have people on to PBS to interview them. I do like a pre-record. And John's one of those guys I just instantly connected with. And I felt like I had known him my whole life. And part of that is just John. He's a gregarious, very knowledgeable, great guy to talk to. And he's been on my show a couple times since. I did get to interview him on PBS television here for the Wisconsin Film Festival. And have you guys seen his documentary, A Road at Night?
Not the new one, no.
Oh, man, is it good. It is.
Being distributed yet? How do you find it right now?
Yeah, they're going to do a theatrical release, and then it'll come out on streaming. But it's about Howard Moore, the former UW men's basketball player.
Yes.
Coach. And his family. They had a terrible car accident in 2019 when they were driving from Chicago to Detroit, and a drunk driver hit them and killed his wife and daughter, and Howard was injured, but he was recovering. Then he had a heart attack, so he was severely disabled from that. Their son was okay. An incredible story, and it sounds horrible, and that part of it is. There's no question about that, but you know, you find yourself watching it being very proud to be associated with UW any way possible. Like, my younger brother went here, and I'm like, yeah, that's my school! Because the outpouring of love from the UW community to Howard's family, it's all showcased in the documentary. It's just great. It's a really good film.
Why don't you tell us about your program? You know, Gordy, you mentioned we wanted to know a little bit more.
You've been doing this PBS program for a long time.
Oh, I thought you guys were headed to OnlyFans.
Your OnlyFans site.
Get a plug in for that.
I don't want to hear about it.
Yes, I have been working for PBS since shortly after I moved to Wisconsin about 12 or 13 years ago, and they're great. I hosted a show called Director's Cut.
Yes.
Where I got to interview independent filmmakers. There was a host before me called Charles Monroe Kane, and he stepped down, I think, to write a book, and it opened up, and I took over and had a blast with it. And I was a guest on it, and that's how they got to know me.
Yeah.
I didn't screw up too bad, so they asked me to.
No, but you have all these great filmmakers that are in there kind of pitching their film and talking about it, and it's really an interesting show. I love that.
You know, the first time I saw an episode of that was, I was still living in L.A. It was like 2009, and Steve Burrows, a Milwaukee filmmaker, was on. And he shared a clip on Facebook, and I'm like, what is this really cool show? This is in Wisconsin about indie film. Like, L.A. didn't have anything like that, you know? Right. So I just thought it was the greatest thing ever. So it was really fun when they asked me to host it. I loved it, and now I introduce all the POV and independent lens films, and I write the intros for that, and... Yeah, it's been a great run. I love working for PBS. They're very easy, you know.
I worked for a PBS station in South Bend a number of years ago. Yeah. After I was done being a TV weatherman in South Bend, I went over to the PBS station, had a little show, a little travel kind of show things going on. And it was an interesting experience. It was, I'd worked at a lot of radio stations and a few TV stations before that. But working for PBS is a different kind of animal. It's just a different vibe in there. They want to inform, they want to entertain, but things move sometimes kind of slowly through the system. I found a lot of committees were involved with making the show that I was trying to produce. But you've had a kind of a different experience. I mean, it's been pretty good.
It's been great.
It's just about film.
Yeah.
That's your wheelhouse.
I'm kind of a hired gun. I don't have any ownership in the shows so. They just kind of hire me to do this, and I'm happy to do that. I like to write, and I like to perform. So, and it is a chill vibe. It was, coming from L.A. and then dealing with people at PBS Wisconsin, it was kind of a nice little change of pace, a country road compared to a, but they're very serious.
Oh,
and they take it very serious what they do. But, I've had a good time there.
Yeah. Talk about, you were a stand-up for a while.
Yeah.
When did you get into that? And where was that in Chicago when you were living there? Or did that happen after you went to L.A.? When did you start stand-up?
Yeah, I started when I was a sophomore at DePaul University. I think it was my sophomore year. I did like a coffee house show. And then I got into a stand-up comedy contest for college kids in Chicago. And I won that, and I thought I was going to have my own sitcom in like 3 weeks. And I went to my first open mic where nobody knew me, and I was like, I think I hate myself. So that was kind of a rude awakening. But, Yeah, so I did stand up for like 7 years, then moved to LA and kind of segued out of stand up and more into writing and a little bit of acting and hosting, but mostly writing, and got lucky, sold some screenplays, but only one of them got made. It was frustrating. You know, there's like stuff that we put our heart and soul into that will never get made. It's just sitting on a shelf collecting dust.
Was this something you started?
What do you mean? Like
did you star in your movie?
Oh, no. Well, the one we sold to MGM, I didn't. That was just, that got made. It was called The Guy Thing. And I was just one of the co-writers. And then I made a film called The Godfather of Green Bay. And I was in that.
Yeah.
And that was a trip because I talk about, like, it was a one-stop shop. Like, I did everything. I raised the money, directed it, wrote it, starred in it. And then my involvement ended. And thank God I had amazing people around me because I didn't know what I was doing. Like,
really?
Well, directing-wise, the one smart thing I did was surround myself with great people because I had never directed anything before. And the film, you know, it did well. It's got a little cult following, and I'm proud of it. Tony Goldwyn's in it. Lauren Holly, you know, some really good
actors. I haven't seen it. I got to see this thing.
Yeah. Amazon Prime.
Oh, it
is. Or Tubi. Tubi, it's free.
Oh, okay, Tubi.
Just talking myself out of 2 cents there. Right?
Really? Residual money. It all adds up.
What do you think of that tax credit now that these small movie makers have access to?
I love it. And those guys worked really hard, Action Wisconsin. I have a project that we were going to go to northern Minnesota to film because you can utilize two incentives there. But now, since this has passed, if I can get it together and get the money together and all that, I can shoot it in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And I can sleep in my own bed at night. You know, it's like seriously a great thing for Wisconsin filmmakers.
It took so long to get something like this passed.
And it seems like such a no-brainer to do
this. How does something bipartisan take that long to pass? Like, we're polarized, but this was like a slam dunk, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And it still took forever.
You know, all these small towns, they really benefit. A lot of people make a journey to those small towns while they're filming. And
Was it the Dillinger film or something? That had all kinds of people coming to wherever their location was.
Right. Yeah. Oshkosh is where they shot that.
Well,
and
they shot some of it in Columbus, too.
Believe it was Columbus.
Oh, yeah.
Right here.
Yeah.
But, they kind of traveled.
And Superman, you know, was filmed there.
You saw Superman, John.
I did. I saw Superman.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. You guys both loved it, right?
I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked it. My family really, really liked it. You know, when we leave the theater, it's like, we got to have that 4K Blu-ray. That's
they're big into all
that's what I know. Oh, wow. You know that we like the movie.
You should see John's living room. He's got four big movie recliners. What are they called? The movie seats.
Yeah, I've got theater
and a gigantic
seats.
Oh, television.
Yeah,
nice.
I've got theater seats. I've got a great sound system. I surround. You know,
is it color TV? You got a color TV?
I have an OLED. 65-inch OLED TV. It's gorgeous.
You're all set.
I am all set.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, that movie, I thought, you know, I was watching it. Everybody knows about Superman.
Yeah.
And
it's like
familiar with his work.
And somehow, for some reason, they thought to explain parts of Superman's life. And I just thought, how dumb is this? It kind of stopped me for... you know, the momentum of just you know, seeing what would really happen in this movie, see the new DC universe unfold before my very eyes. Yeah. I just had a little bit too much background. We all know Superman. Okay, we got it.
Right.
But, you know, there are certain elements to it. It was the relationship he had with Lois Lane. That was kind of new. They brought that in.
And it was already happening. We didn't have to see that whole romance blossom, thank God.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
No, it was good. I liked a lot of it. I love the... I don't typically love CGI, but man, has it arrived. Like, I've seen it in Jurassic Park. The dinosaurs in Jurassic Park, this Jurassic Park, Jurassic World.
The last one?
Rebirth, unbelievable. And then Superman with the flying. You feel like you're in 3D, like just on his back or something.
Yeah.
You know, it was amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're visiting with Pete Schwabe, host of Nightlight, and... can you stick around? I feel funny asking you that. You got a show coming up in 10 minutes.
You think I'll have time to slide over to that chair?
I think so.
During the news on top of the
hour?
He
doesn't give it up easy.
That's right.
You can host Nightlight tonight.
Oh, no.
I'll go out and hit State Street again.
No, we've been up since old Doc, 4 o'clock this morning. So it's been kind of a long day. We'll continue here with Pete Schwabe. It's John and Gordy filling in for Maggie Dawn on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Civic Media Radio Network, John and Gordy in the morning filling in for What is her name?
Maggie Dawn. That's when you get her right.
Yeah. Well, I know. Jeez. I know. And that music is from Bubba Hotep.
Okay.
Bubba Hotep.
Oh, okay.
Great movie.
Yeah.
It's
a fun film.
I'm Maggie the producer.
That's Jacob.
Don't pay attention.
We're visiting with the...
I didn't see him before. Now I see his picture up there. Okay.
Okay. We're here with Pete Schwabba.
With my camera angle there? I look like I'm on Mount Rushmore or something. Like I'm looking up and looks like a 1970s graduation picture or something. Like
yeah. It's so weird. Yeah. Pete Schwabba's with us. He'll be on the air after we're done here and with Nightlight.
We're trying to find out a little bit more about Pete, you know, kind of the TV shows he watched when he was younger. Again, Starsky and Hutch, which is great.
I don't think my parents actually allowed me to watch that when it was first on, believe it or not, because it was like
too violent,
edgy.
Yeah,
I mean, it's network TV, but you know, I don't know. Yeah. But I would watch it at a friend's house.
What about comedies? What were you watching as a kid on TV? Were you
You know, my parents would put on, like, the Carol Burnett Show, Bob Newhart. That was, like, Saturday night.
Good stuff.
Maybe MASH.
Bob,
Yeah.
So I grew up kind of not really understanding Bob Newhart, but, you know, I lived in Chicago, so I like when you get off the L.
Oh, yeah.
Like, well, I should probably like this show.
Yeah, right. What part of Chicago did you grow up in?
The Northwest Side, about 3 miles west of Wrigley Field, right after Kennedy.
I was out in the burbs in Wheaton.
Yeah, that's
Warrenville,
right.
Yeah.
And you met... our friend who was on my show, John Davies.
Yeah.
He was a great guest.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, and we all, you know, and we went to school with the Belushi brothers, so that was kind of the big deal later on. You know, we didn't realize it at the time. They were just a couple of knuckleheads. John Belushi was in my sister's class, the class of 67, Wheaton Central High School.
Wow.
And Jim Belushi was a year behind me, and so he would have been in the class of 72.
Gordy's still bitter about not being in the movie.
Bitter
the
and angry, yeah.
They could have called.
Yeah.
I coached Jim Belushi's kid at a downtown... like sports club. It was my college job.
Yeah.
Robert Belushi, and he went on to become an actor.
Yeah.
And Jim would show up at the games, and I was like, oh man, I should get him my headshot or something. Yeah. Like, thank God I didn't do that.
I know. Yeah.
Give him
a
weird look or whatever.
Right.
Nice enough guy.
So you grew up in you know, Chicago proper, Northwest Side.
Yeah.
Near Wrigley.
Yeah.
You a Cubs fan?
I was.
Okay. Still. You can admit it.
No, right. I am. It's hard to, you know. It's weird because I feel like as a Cubs fan, after 2016, I just don't care. I got to see something my grandpa didn't get to see in his whole life.
Yeah.
So I'm like, whatever. I don't care. This is the bonus round.
Whatever happens.
You know, I cheer for them, and I want them to win.
But, they've got the Brewers manager.
Yes.
So, you know, there's a lot of tension there.
Brewers are doing okay, though. With
they're
pretty good manager.
Right.
Yeah.
By the way, they lost last night, which means no one got a George Webb burger, a free burger.
No.
Yeah.
That's a true sports fan.
Yeah.
The guy is pissed off. He didn't get it.
So how'd you make your... So you went from Chicago to L.A. or Chicago to where?
No, we went... Well, I went from Chicago to Marinette in junior high.
Okay.
Yeah, my dad was an attorney and he wanted to do trial work. So he kind of became like Atticus Finch. You know, we moved up to Marinette.
Okay.
I still don't quite understand how they picked Marinette, Wisconsin out of... It's like one of those Navin Johnson moments in The Jerk where you just open the atlas and point. But... you know, I'm glad they did. I met my wife up there. We were home for a summer during college, and we met. And we decided when we left L.A. that that was a good place to go because we had parents there. And the kids would go there on holidays, and they liked it. So, so we've been back there now for a while. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, could you, you know, give us a little hint about your question tonight?
Yes, our question,
of the night. Okay.
This is a Conrad Krieger question.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And or his family, I should say. They said, "Hey, tell Pete he should do this question."
Okay. Oh,
Conrad related.
Now you
Conrad's
have
the middleman. So if you hate the question, don't hurt Conrad.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
So what is it?
It's where does up north start in Wisconsin?
That is a great question.
Yeah. That is.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I don't even know where. I think I'm up north. I think Marinette is northeast, but it's north for sure.
I'm sure you're up north. No doubt about that.
Well, Portage, which is not that far north of here.
Yeah.
Their sign, their slogan is where the north begins. And I don't believe that at all. Portage is, you know,
Better than Sun Prairie, though.
15 miles from here. Yeah.
Wisconsin was north for you, being in Chicago. For me, I'm from Milwaukee, so north for me was anything above 94, Highway 94.
Right. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Even the north side of Milwaukee?
Yeah. Yeah, it was you know, no one knew what was up there. You
oh,
know?
You're up in Shorewood?
Germantown, I don't know where that is. I don't know.
That's wild.
Crazy. Yeah. It was crazy.
I love Milwaukee. My parents both went to Marquette, and that's where they met. And my mom's family moved to Milwaukee when she went to college. The Murphy, Pat Murphy, my uncle.
Oh, really?
No relation.
Oh.
Is not a good manager either, but a good guy. So anyway, yeah, so I love Milwaukee. It's
and Jeff Cesari, you have him booked as a guest pretty soon, so we can have a little family reunion.
Listen, pal, I want to tell you something, John. Yeah. You said you're related to Jeff. You said maybe we could do a family thing because the families hadn't talked in a long time. So I floated that out there to Jeff.
Not a peep. I have not heard a word. I don't know what the heck happened in your family. He's not going to admit that he knows you. He's forget about it.
It's crazy. I don't understand this, you know. Because our parents always had family get-togethers, and we got so used to it, and we hated it as children. Now, as an older person, I'm thinking, you know, wouldn't hurt to get together every once in a while, right? And,
Absolutely.
I don't know.
He's a great guy, Jeff.
He really is.
Does he live in L.A.? Is he out there?
Yeah. I think he's still out there.
Emmy-winning writer, wrote for Dennis Miller. I think he wrote for The Tonight Show, performed on The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
Just a really good guy. Loves Wisconsin. Loves his Wisconsin sports team. Larry Sanders. Yeah.
Yeah.
He had a running joke on Larry Sanders about his name.
He always got bumped.
He was the guy they can't clear. We'll book him back.
That's great stuff.
Well, hopefully you guys can connect someday.
Well, I'm relying on Pete to do this.
I got to find more guests because of John. Right. I don't know.
Well, guess what? You're on in about 5 or 6 minutes. So we got to wrap things up. But Pete Schwab, thanks for being with us.
Pleasure, guys. Thank you. Right.
Break a leg tonight. We'll be listening on our way home.
All right. I hope so.
And that's going to do it for John and Gordy filling in for Maggie Dawn. She'll be back tomorrow.
I'm going to hop in my EV and make it home.
All right. Pete Schwab is next on the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a good night.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.